Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:11 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Today is November 20th, and today was another interesting day in the markets, but it was really a pleasure to be in London last week and to meet a number of subscribers at the chart seminar from 8 different countries, and to have a great discussion about markets and where are we in terms of short and medium and long term cycles, and also there were a couple of things that that really came to light in terms of what, and it's something that we see at just about all of the seminars, is that it's a clear indication of what people own and what people are interested in, depending on what they ask for in terms of the examples that we cover, because David and I have long espouse the Socratic method when teaching the seminar, and we open up the floor to let people choose whatever instruments to examine they wish, so that we can both demonstrate that the methodology is functional in any market where there is an imbalance between supply and demand, and also to ensure that we're covering things that people are interested in. Well, considering that Bitcoin has gone from, for example, 2,000 in the middle of the July to 8,000 today, is rather spectacular, and that it has rallied more this month, over $2,000, than gold did in a 10-year bull market. And what I was rather surprised by is that no one asked to see the chart. That we did cover the chart, and most particularly that we had a little discussion about it, but that it was into the second day before we really got around to looking at it. What was interesting, and something I want to reiterate about Bitcoin, is that it really is best viewed on a log scale, because the log scale gives us percentage moves, and the vast majority of people that are investing in Bitcoin are doing so on an unleveraged basis. Now, that is going to change. There are going to be options and futures on cryptocurrencies, but they're not available yet, and that means that this is still an unleveraged market. And the introduction of leverage, and which will also introduce hedging, but it will create even more volatility. And that, I think, is what part of the reason why prices are rallying now, is because all those cash buyers are anticipating that prices are going to go substantially higher from here. But what we have, we're presented with quite clearly on that log scale chart, is a staircase step sequence uptrend. And as long as that remains the case, as long as it continues to rally in an emphatic manner, it pulls back in an equally emphatic manner, but that the reactions hold above the high of the previous range, then these are primary consistency characteristics, and we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But by far, the largest number of examples that were requested were from the technology sector. And the NASDAQ continues to rally, and when you look at it simply on a daily basis, then it has obviously got a pretty consistent chart pattern with a series of ranges one above another, and that the size of the ranges are becoming progressively smaller, whereas the advances are also continuing higher. And when we look at that over not simply the last 5 years, but maybe the last 10 years, so that we can see that it posted its first higher reaction low in early 2009, and that exhibited already relative strength and temporal leadership, and that the pace of the advance has certainly picked up since the US election last year. And it is characterized by a progression of higher reaction lows and one range above another. And as long as that remains the case, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. However, what we can also anticipate is that this pace of advance is picking up. If we do not get a reversion back to the mean, then we can anticipate that if the pace persists as it's going, that we're going to get an increasingly wide overextension. And that is characterized by, that would be the very definition of acceleration. And acceleration is a trend ending. And considering that the vast majority of the examples that we saw, particularly in the first day of the chart seminar, were related to the technology sector, well, that at least tells us that we're not early coming into this market, that it is that we're well on the way through the anticipation phase, and particularly for some of the really high momentum shares that we may be entering the euphoria stage. And there are some rather large overextensions relative to the trend mean in the technology sector. Nvidia would certainly be one of those. So are a number of the gaming companies like Activision. And for example, Nvidia has gone from 100 to 220 in just the last 6 months. It was also among the best, I think it was in fact the best performer on the S&P 500 last year. It's quite unusual that you get something that is the best performer on the index of over 500 shares 2 years in a row, but it is really quite overextended relative to the trend mean at this stage. And even if we just simply take Activision Blizzard as an example of just one of the gaming companies, because they have a great deal of commonality, but it is also unwinding now an overbought condition. As long as it is holding above the trend mean, we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. Take-Two Software would be another example. And that has been accelerating higher, and it is now at $117. The moving average is closer to 85, so we have really quite an acute overextension, and that is a clear example of acceleration. But it's not the only one. That in the Chinese market, you have Tencent, which has been doing spectacularly well and had very positive earnings last year and is growing at a really quite impressive rate. So, but nonetheless, it is accelerating. It has done frightfully well over the last 4 weeks, and it is not beyond the bounds possibility that we get some form of consolidation. What is also quite interesting now is that the US bond markets are beginning to price in the prospect of more rate hikes. The 2-year yield is at almost 1.75%. So it's considering that there is the real possibility that we're going to have the US Senate and House get their act together and pass some kind of tax cut for the USA, then we have to at least pay some attention to where are we in terms of the cycle now that that is beginning to occur, because we are already at almost record low unemployment. The expansion has been going on for a long time already, although it has been modest in nature relative to other expansions from very low levels. But if we now move into a fiscal expansion or a fiscal stimulus, then that represents pro-cyclical policies. And generally speaking, pro-cyclical policies would result in inflation. And the Federal Reserve is going to have a new Fed chair, and there'll be a couple of extra spaces that'll have to be filled on the board next year. So there is certainly the potential that the bond market test the new Fed chair, and that might be what the 2-year yield is starting to price in. That with a new Fed chair, we're going to get some additional questioning of what the most likely priorities are going to be. Now, junk bond yields, or excuse me, the junk bond ETF bounced last week, and it unwound at least part of its short-term oversold condition, but it is going to have to now hold that low around 36.4. That represents the most recent low, and in the meantime, it is going to have to sustain a move back above the trend mean, and which would mean a sustained move back above 37 is going to be required to confirm more than short-term steadying here. This I think remains a rather risky environment for the high yield sector, not least because yields are so very low. And if we do get additional rate hikes, then the possibility that we're going to have spreads widening out is a realistic possibility. Now, high yield spreads have bounced over the last 4 weeks and are now trading back above the trend mean. And that's important because despite the fact that we had that bounce on the price, the yield barely budged from really quite firm levels and widening that we saw last week. So now the question is whether the spread is going to continue to widen. If we get high yield spreads starting to widen out, then that is going to represent a headwind for stock markets. And we can already see that we had high yield spreads widen pretty substantially, almost 500 basis points, in fact more than that, between July of 2014 and early 2016. And that represented a period of time when stock markets went generally sideways. If I simply overlay the S&P 500 over that spread chart, we'll see that quite clearly. So the S&P pretty much stopped going up in the middle of 2014 and went broadly sideways until we started to see those high yield spreads coming down again. Now, if we start to see the yield pick up and we, for example, get it above 400 basis points on that spread, well, that is going to represent a headwind for equity markets, and the higher those spreads go, the greater the headwind they're going to represent. So we know how choppy the environment was between 2015 and all the way through to the beginning of 2016, and it's not beyond the bounds possibility that we can move into an equally choppy, if not more choppy, environment because it's occurring from a much higher price level. So this is a factor that really does merit keeping an eye on. Now, if we look at gold on the weekly basis, then there was, let me just take off that chart. This is only updated through Friday, and the price pulled back rather sharply in here today. The gold price was down about $17, so it is now, it has completely unwound that move that we saw on Friday. And I don't have access to my Bloomberg at the present at right now. I think the David's internet has fallen over, and I haven't been able to get it back up, so I'm not able to access it remotely. And what I can see from the broker prices is that it has completely unwound last Friday's upward dynamic. Now, when we look at this chart over the last year, this range that we've had in gold has been particularly inert, and on Friday we saw an uptick, and it was a bounce from the region of the trend mean, and it got slammed right back down in here today. So now the big question is what happens tomorrow. That we're still now back in the region of the trend mean. If it fails at this level, then that opens up the potential that it could fall back towards $1,200. And even if it were to fall back to $1,100, it would still be in a range following that massive reaction against the prevailing downtrend at the beginning of 2016. That had type 2 bottoming characteristics, and this is a period of right-hand extension. And periods of right-hand extension can be quite lengthy and quite volatile because what they represent is that supply and demand come back into balance, that there is a great deal of indecision in the market, and that people are getting a little bit cautious. One of the reasons that gold has pulled back in here today is because of the strength of the stock market. The other big reason that it would be pulling back is that there are Wall Street firms, not least Goldman, that are beginning to talk about their view that the Fed could raise rates 4 times next year. Gold tends to do best when inflation is outpacing the ability of central banks to raise rates to combat it. And That's just not the case right now. In fact, if anything, the central bank is raising rates ahead of inflation becoming a problem. So they're ahead of the curve, and that's not particularly great news for gold. As a hedge against inflation, interest rates are still doing a pretty reasonable job of doing that. That is, I think, one of the headwinds that it has, and it is one of the things that is keeping it locked within this range. Now, eventually that will change, but so far there's not a great deal of evidence for it. And personally, I'm still long of platinum, and I think platinum really does need to hold the $900 area. It did not rally to the same extent that gold has. It's been much more inert, but it does need to hold that $900 area, or it raises the prospect of a $100 decline all the way back down to the 2016 low. But again, this continues to look like a period of right-hand extension following that big move that we had in 2016. But the precious metals, by and large, are lagging relative to the industrial metals. One of the things that really emerged from the chart seminar is the degree of variability that we have in some of these commodity prices, and the industrial metals look like they are on a recovery trajectory, and really a sustained move below 3,000 would be required to question that conclusion. But that's just simply not the case for example, corn or soybeans or wheat, which remain in these what is already a 3-year range and counting, and there remains a downward bias even within that range. So we're not seeing evidence of inflation coming through in agricultural prices, and so far there's nothing to suggest that it is agricultural prices or where we're going to see inflation coming through. But considering that we're starting to see wages and wage demands rising, then that could put upward pressure on lots of goods, because if people have more money in their wallets and they all go out to spend it, then you get a demand push in terms of prices. So these are, I think, important characteristics. But the other point, of course, is that the stock market is still pricing in the potential for tax cuts, and that is contributing to the Wall Street leash effect. Wall Street is doing really quite well, and that is acting as a positive tug factor on just about all other stock markets. The Euro Stoxx index bounced somewhat in here today, and that's despite political uncertainty in Germany, and not least because the Eurozone or the ECB might be tapering their quantitative easing program for most of next year, but that's not going to reduce the size of the balance sheet. The Japanese market among developed Asia was down somewhat, but it continues to hold this 22,000 level, and this is the first consolidation after what has been a really impressive breakout. Then, if we look at some of the other Euro, or excuse me, Asian markets, South Korea, Taiwan, Thailand, Indonesia, they've all broken up and away from lengthy trading ranges over the last 6 months. It's exactly the same thing with a number of the commodity-related markets, and most particularly the emerging markets, with South Africa, for example, clearing the 55,000 level for the Johannesburg All Share in nominal terms. But Australia is also worth looking at from that regard, because it has been a serial laggard, and it w had its own range, and it has completed a short-term range in just the last month, and it is now testing this 6,000 level, which has been an area of resistance over the last few years, and it doesn't look like anything other than a consolidation. And following what was an impressive move all the way through October, really this just looks like a consolidation in the region of that psychological 6,000 area, and really a sustained move below the trend mean would be required to question that this isn't going to continue higher. And if one were to be very contrarian, then Brent crude is where I think a lot of interest has got to be coming through. That was an upside Q reversal on Friday, and the price was down 6 cents in here today. So really relatively unchanged. When, excuse me, that's not the case. It was down 70 cents in here today. And when we look at this advance and the fact that some of the largest producers in the world are turning bearish with the Norway Sovereign Wealth Fund looking to reduce their exposure to energy shares, and with Saudi Arabia seeking an IPO, and Abu Dhabi already having successfully sold their retail gasoline business. And that's against a background where there is a virtual conclusion that we are going to have a future of battery-driven transportation. But it isn't yet apparent. And solid-state batteries, which have been proposed by everyone from Toyota to Tesla to Dyson to Fisker, they're not yet on the market. And they won't be on the market until about 2020, if not 2022. And that's anything from 3 to 5 years from now. We also know that there is a great deal of unconventional supply, even in the most benign environment. And certainly that is going to become a more compelling factor the higher prices go. Meanwhile, we do have this geopolitical tension, and geopolitics has certainly got a way of impacting oil prices, and I suspect that is what we're seeing, why we're seeing prices move higher from here. Venezuela is on the cusp of default, and nobody quite knows what will happen with its oil and gas assets and how quickly they'll be able to increase supply. And of course, then you have this tension going on in Saudi Arabia, which the point I've made on successive occasions is that it is a feudal society, and the king or the head of the realm is in the process of doing a whip around to gather assets so that they can retain power and against threats both foreign and domestic, while also attempting to stoke nationalism and to create a vision for what they anticipate life will be like in future. So with a population that is 50% of which is under the age of 25, there are rather urgent questions about exactly what they can achieve. So that also represents a tailwind for the oil price. And in the absence of a sustained move below $60, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.